Hello and welcome to Crackpot Theories, where everything is possible until proven otherwise. I'm Circa.
And I'm Sinead.
And welcome back.
I am super hyped for this episode.
Me too, actually. I've heard you rant about this before and I'm very excited to see the delves in which this will go.
Nice. But first things first, you're after coming back from an event recently. You were at AkumaCon in Galway.
I was indeed. I was the guest cosplay judge person, and I did some stand up at it as well. If anyone was there, I hope you enjoyed it.
Well, apparently somebody enjoyed it because you won.
Yes, I did.
Congratulations. I think it's been established on this podcast that you're the funny one. I'm just the one with all the facts.
You're the knowledgeable one.
That's true.
I can't tie my shoelaces.
And you are unaware the Pontypandy is in Wales.
Pontypandy is in Wales.
Okay, so we are going to dive straight into this because there's a lot of ground to cover here. It's very similar to our My Little Pony episode in that there's an awful lot of lore to discuss and many, many different series of Japanese teenagers in massive dresses. So we are talking about magical girls and the scientific theory behind magical girls' power. So tell me, what's been your experience with magical girls?
I absolutely love them. Like when I was a kid, I watched like Sailor Moon and Cardcaptor Sakura and like Madoka Magica when it came out recently. Well, I say recently, but a few years ago.
2011.
So yeah, I do like me some magical girls.
Okay. I have a very similar, I think, isn't it a thing that when we go to anime conventions, we sort of play magical girl bingo? Where there's always at least one Cardcaptor Sakura cosplayer in the crowd. Usually there's somebody from Sailor Moon as well. Not so much in recent years, but there was always at least one. When I was growing up, we had a German channel on our satellite thing. And that was the only channel that played any kind of anime. Except, you know, they had the Pokemon being played on some of the other morning things. But they played Sailor Moon in German and I was obsessed to the point where not only did I record as many episodes as I could, but I ended up speaking very good German because of it.
That's majestic. Like if ever there was a way to learn a second language, it would definitely be watching Sailor Moon.
The great thing about it was that the German theme tune, because they record all their own theme tunes in Germany for animes that they're fond of, usually, not so much anymore, but it's the thing they used to do. And they had this great techno beat, sort of Euro beat track over the start of Sailor Moon and
Sailor Moon. Yes.
It was like that, but also in the ads, because of course I recorded a whole bunch of German ads, they used to bring out these CDs that were sort of tangentially related to Sailor Moon, but they were things like, Bass Hunter and Scooter Roller Girl and all of those. It's just like, it's got nothing to do with Sailor Moon. They're just selling Eurobeat.
Never forget the 90s. Never forget.
Ah, the 90s were a glory time. But
moving along.
Yes, moving very swiftly along. So I do have a theory about magical girls. Mm-hmm. And my theory is that the amount of power the average magical girl has is directly related to how big her hair is and how big her dress is. They act as a sort of almost solar panel in that they gather in the energy to power up their attacks. Therefore, you need to have, if you're a magical girl, you need to have a big fluffy outfit. Otherwise, you're just not that effective as a magical girl.
So what you're telling me is magical girls basically Gigantamax from Pokemon.
Yes, very similar. It's kind of a unique phenomenon, right? In that when we're talking magical girls, there's a real cutesy, real girly air to it all. Mm. And because of that, people tend to think that it's kid stuff. Now, a lot of the time it is kid stuff. The Pretty Cure series, that is kid stuff. It's made specifically for kids. And the fact that it's very popular with both adult Western women and Japanese men is not, you know, it's just part and parcel of it. It's real enthusiastic. I'm going to compare this to sort of the Marvel movies and the Marvel superheroes. You know, you have so many amazing, strong women in the likes of the Marvel, DC, all these superhero
Wonder
women.
Woman.
Yeah, exactly. And I have great admiration for them, but I never warmed to them. And I think it's partially to do with the outfits, because I just don't like the skin tight latex idea. Even when they upgrade to something that's not quite skin tight latex and it's sort of something that's more like body armor or like an armored wetsuit or something like that, I just don't like it. And I think I have to compare this then to my experience as a cosplayer, because the most comfortable cosplay outfits that I have ever worn have been big poofy dresses. Like when I, like, what's been the most comfortable cosplay you've ever worn?
When I cosplayed Diglett, because I had to, I had my entirely normal clothes underneath it, and I was just holding an umbrella above my head to shape the Diglett, and I was just bopping around. But that was so comfortable because I had my own shoes. I didn't have to worry about makeup or anything. I was just looking like some form of swamp gremlin underneath it, and I was so comfortable, and the photos were amazing. And yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah. Well, similar to that, well, not that similar, it's just from the same franchise. Obviously, my Blissey costume was the most comfortable costume that I ever wore, because it was a big poofy dress. It was three layers of petticoats, an apron, which was really handy for putting my phone in, and little puffy wings and everything. And I just wore ballet slippers with it. And, you know, if I was to fight an enemy, they always say to that about magical girls is you can't fight your enemies in these big dresses. It's not practical. It's like, I would have a significantly easier time fighting my enemies, of which I have many, in a big poofy dress. That just feels more natural to me. And I'd probably be in a better mood as well than trying to move around in kind of skin-tight body armour.
You can hide things in the petty as well.
Yes.
It's like from Good Omens when Agnes Nutter put a load of gunpowder and nails into her petticoat when she exploded. Yeah,
well, it's like in Magic of Madoka when Mami Tomoe just kept spamming guns out of her skirt.
Ah, yes.
You know, that was pretty glorious.
Who else doesn't have an AK-47 in their skirts?
Yeah, it's perfect. And, you know, also, I mean, the whole history behind the likes of big crinolines and panniers and things like that, a lot of the time it actually acted as a keep away from me barrier towards untoward men.
Yeah, because the cages.
Yeah, exactly.
It's big metal cages.
Yeah, it's like a walking sea urchin type of thing, almost. But, you know, there has been a bit of a thing where people have said that, you know, you can't fight evil if you're wearing a little short skirt like that. And that's fair enough. That's if you're using physical powers. But a lot of these magical girls, they use magical powers, except for Pretty Cure. But we'll talk about Pretty Cure in a minute. But my example for this now, first of all, Sailor Moon. So Sailor Moon would be the ultimate embodiment of magic girl, because she went where many, many followed. For a number of years, every franchise that came out was trying to be Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
And it was just that big. Now, Sailor Moon herself has got massive hair.
Like, she does.
Not massive volume, but it's super, super long and super ribbony. When she's in her original outfit, now there's not that much surface area to that, but you know, she does the power up, she gets the outfit. Then when they went into Sailor Moon S, which was a further series, she gets the power up. And what happens? She gets poofier sleeves, poofier transparent sleeves, apparently. She got slightly longer hair. She gets barrettes as well in her hair. She gets a big ribbon for the back of the skirt, and she gets another layer on the skirt as well.
Yeah.
So more surface area.
Yeah.
So there's a reason for that. It's not just for looks, but it literally boosted her. And then there's the thing when she gets depowered, she goes back to her normal civilian clothes and she can't do her attacks anymore. So there's something connected to the fabric of that makeup. And then, of course, that's not the only power up she gets. She gets a further power up then when she moves into Eternal Sailor Moon, where she gets the sort of cheerleading style skirt, which is three layers.
Yeah.
A petticoat underneath that, Her boots are much longer and she gets these massive angel wings. Now, I actually hated that last costume. I thought it was hideous. It really was. It was awful and tacky. But there was a lot of surface area to it. So again, that was when she was probably as regular edition Sailor Moon. That's when she was at her most powerful. And then, of course, she gets two alternatives, one of which is her Princess Sailor Moon, which is the big white dress. That is a big white dress. And she's got the angel wings, too. And then after a while, she also gets Neo Queen Serenity, which is very similar to the Princess Serenity dress, except it's like it's more like a cocktail dress. And she gets wings on the back of that, too. But then she also gets a staff. So I figure the staff must be making up some of the surface area there. If you can, because I looked now, like when I was considering doing a Princess Serenity costume, I was looking into like the shape of the dress. It's an A-line and it doesn't appear to have a hoop skirt underneath it. So automatically you lose some surface area there.
Yeah.
So the Neo Queen Serenity dress has slightly more surface area, I think. I'm looking at this from kind of a fabric cutting standpoint. But if you're just looking like energy cells per square meter, then Neo Queen Serenity wins out. Am I sounding completely insane?
No, it does very much make sense, because you'd see it an awful lot that the bigger something is, it seems to be synonymous with being more powerful. So if she's getting more layers on her skirt, it would conduce that there is going to be more power.
Yeah, and funnily enough then, in the very last episode of the series, all of her friends die and she ends up naked.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she has this whole naked battle.
As you do.
Pretty much. I think it was symbolic. I think it was supposed to be some sort of rebirth thing. But she still had the big hair and she still had massive angel wings. So she still had a certain amount of surface area then. And then all the ghosts of her friends and everything came back to help her. So they made up the surface area towards the end.
It's like a reverse of like any MMORPGs, where like women's armor, when it's really weak, you start off with loads of it. But as it gets more powerful, it just gets skimpier and skimpier until the only thing covering you is your hair. Like it's the reverse of that.
It's the exact reverse of that, which is glorious. I mean, the other thing that I can say about Sailor Moon is in Sailor Moon S, that's the one with the outer senshi, the ones that come from like Pluto, Uranus, Neptune and Saturn. She has to fight Mistress Nine, who is super powerful.
That's the one where her daughter comes into it as well.
Chibiusa came in Sailor Moon R. That was before that. And then in Sailor Moon S, it was mostly them dealing with the impending apocalypse.
Sailor Moon timelines are difficult.
Well, again, I watched them all in German, so I know them all off by heart, which is... I know them all off by heart in German.
The only German I know is that if you need an ambulance, you call the Krankenwagen and then you go to the Krankenhaus. That is the only German I know.
It sounds like a great place for you, actually.
Yeah, like...
The Krankenhaus.
Oh, broke my ankle. Let's go to the Krankenhaus. I love it so much. And I really want to learn German because it sounds like a fun language.
I figured there's one phrase that you should have with you when you go to Germany. And it's... Entschuldigung, meine Deutsche sind furchtbar. Ich bin eine dumme Tourist. Which is, please excuse me, my German is terrible. I'm a stupid tourist. They like it when you say that. They like when you admit to your foibles and then they treat you with slightly less disdain.
They're like, aw, bless.
They're trying. But yeah, moving on. Mistress Nine was a very powerful villain. Now, her dress was relatively simple, but she had huge amounts of hair, buckets of the stuff. She was proper Rapunzel style. And it was just everywhere. Like, it was prehensile as well, so she could strangle people with it.
As you do.
Yeah, so... That's part and parcel of her power, is that she was using all that hair as an energy cell.
Is that kind of like Tangled then? Because like her hair even glows because there's so much of it.
Well, that's magic, but we're working with science, kind of.
Okay.
No, I'm going to have to admit here, I'm not very good at science, and you're going to hear more about that later. I did home economics in school. I can make really amazing cakes, but I cannot science at all. So where the series gets really interesting is when you come to the Pretty Cure series, which is one of my favorite series of all time because it is just ridiculous and it doesn't care that it's ridiculous. And that's why it's so beautiful. Also, it is unashamedly tacky. And again, doesn't care about it. It is purely made to sell toys to children and to me.
From what I've seen of it, it's wonderfully campy and just so many colours. And it would kind of remind you of Totally Spies and the amount of colours in it. What I saw in the clips.
Do you know what I love about it in particular is that every now and like almost every year they do an All Stars movie.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like if you've got your Pre-Cure waifu somewhere in the series, you'll always see her again because she'll be there somewhere in the background in All Stars. But now this is probably going to be slightly controversial, even though this is a very apolitical podcast.
No.
Do you know, I'm just going to talk about a scene from Endgame, Avengers Endgame, that I did not care for, which is a controversial opinion. Everybody is absolutely welcome to disagree with me. But the bit towards the end when all the strong women come together and they're just like, go on, we got this. And it's just all the women in the Marvel movies are coming together and standing in front of the enemy. I found that unbearably cringy. Just unbearably cringy. First of all, at least one person in that group was very much a non-combatant and she was trying to look tough and it just wasn't working.
Was that Mantis?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, she doesn't fight. That's not where her powers lie. But she was trying to do the whole I'm standing in front of the enemy, shielding them with my body kind of thing. And it's just, there was no reason for any of these people to come together. They didn't know each other that well. Even though they're in the same fight, it just seemed really unnatural because they were all at different points of the battlefield to start with. And then all of a sudden they sort of designated, this is the woman corner. We're going to hold the woman corner over here.
But it made for a nice cinematic shot, apparently.
I didn't think it was very... it's just... Otherwise, I really enjoyed Endgame. To a degree, I think Captain America should have died at the end, but that's just because I like it when things are bleak.
Do you know what should have died?
What?
Marvel.
Again, a political podcast. I just said that was going to be kind of controversial. You went for full on controversial. Are you trying to get us firebombed?
No. I just want to say that I'm a very big fan of Dark Horse and I'm really excited for the Spawn movie. So that's where my allegiances lie.
Okay, that's fair.
He also has a very, very large cape to summon like his power, so yeah, he's a magical girl in my opinion.
Okay, fair. I'll take that and I'll put it in a box somewhere and never think about it again. But you get the exact opposite in All Stars, because even though All Stars, when they come together, like they do naturally sort of bond together within their color radius, they stay in their teams, and then sometimes all the pinks will go off and do something together because the pinks are always the team leaders. And they're all a bunch of idiots, so they hardly ever get anything done, but they make up for it in sheer firepower. And then all the greens and the blues kind of hang out in the corner and go, I remember you from last time. How are you doing? Did you get that homework done? They're just, it's the exact opposite because they're so happy to see each other.
Wholesome.
It's very wholesome. It's beautiful because then there's certain kind of like there's two girls who sort of bonded over their love of baking. They're not from the same series at all. And they're just like, oh, I got that recipe for cake that you wanted last time we fought gigantic evil. And it's a beautiful moment. They're all just such good friends and they love being together and hanging out together. And then at the end of every movie, they have a dance party. No matter what, they have to have a dance party where they sing their theme tunes, do a little dance, and they just have great fun. And there's just such a sense of joy in there. It's all colour and glittery and sparkly and happy. Even, like, some of these movies do get quite gritty in ways. Actually, Heartcatch Pretty Cure was, by a magical girl standards, incredibly bleak 2 years before Magica Madoka.
Oh...
Yeah, also the character designs for Heartcatch are radically different, like to the point of being completely alien to every other adaptation of Pre-Cure. But they never change it for the movies. They just leave them in there. So they're just they just look completely alien and everybody's perfectly fine with it.
Ah, yeah.
It's just like, I love my weird looking friend.
They're from the other studio. It's fine.
Okay. But going back to our theory, because I'm veering off topic because I'm talking about Pretty Cure, so I'm getting all gushy about it. The very first Pretty Cure series came out in 2004. They had two Pre-Cures, Cure Back and Cure White. Now, at the time, their magical girl outfits were quite stripped down. Cure Black's outfit has cycling shorts underneath it, and she's got a crop top as well because she's quite a tomboyish character. And Cure White's is more ladylike. She's got this great big bell-shaped skirt. They've got both got these absolutely hideous leg warmers that were really in fashion at the time. But when it comes down to it, the one who's the more brutal fighter is Cure White. She's the one who's more vicious, especially she's got a ferocious kick in her. She kicks like a mule. And she's the more ladylike one. But they don't have a huge amount of firepower. Now, the fights in the original Pretty Cure, because this was a series that was partially created by the people behind Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, well, that explains an awful lot.
Yeah. It's not just like Sailor Moon where, you know, we'll get out our magic wand and we'll beam spam you with the energy. They will kick their enemies to death.
That makes so much sense because even in Dragon Ball, when they go up the Saiyan levels, their hair gets bigger. You know,
yes, we're connecting the dots here. But there's another thing is that when they have to use their ultimate attack, they have to hold hands to do it. So on their own, they're not that powerful. Now, I think that Cure Black, Cure White, they may have been the very first Pretty Cures. They were a prototype. Even though later on in the series, they have like Pretty Cures going back like 80 years. But then time travel, we can explain that away with that. But that's not this podcast.
That's for a different podcast.
That is for a different podcast. We will talk about all the many ways that time travel might work. But they tried to figure it out. And then later on, they did a second season and they brought in Shiny Luminous, who is not, in fact, a Pretty Cure, even though she's lumped in with the rest of them. And what Shiny Luminous is she is an external battery pack. She only exists to power up their attacks, to give an extra little boost there. She has no attacks of her own.
Is that her actual name?
Shiny Luminous, yes.
So her parents had her and just looked at her like, yes.
No, that's her Pretty Cure name.
Okay. I was thinking that they just had this newborn baby and said, ah, Shiny Luminous. What a beautiful name for my beautiful daughter.
I have heard people name their children weirder things than that.
But Shiny Luminous, they'd never find their name in a gift shop, like.
Well, do you ever find your name in a gift shop?
No. No, I do not. It was once on a can of Coke that I got specially made for me, but that was it.
So what you're saying here is that you feel a deep kinship with Shiny Luminous.
A little bit.
No, she has a regular edition Japanese name. Oh. And then when she transforms, she becomes Shiny Luminous, who only exists to, like, there's a bit in one of the movies where she can't even move around on her own. They're all floating out in space and beam spamming all their attacks in order to float around space and fight their evil. And like Shiny Luminous, she can't even get out of the way.
Oh no.
She's literally just sort of doggy paddling. You half expect her to have one of those inflatable tubes around her and just go, I'll just be over here until you're done, guys.
Don't mind me. Carry on with your fighting. Yes.
No, she is just literally there. But it's kind of nice that they feel like including her in the dance party every time, even though she's just a living battery pack.
Oh, bless.
It's very, very cute. But yeah, that's the first Pretty Cure series. So when you move on to future seasons, because there is a new series of Pretty Cure every single year. So the one that came out 2 years later in 2006 was, yes, Pretty Cure 5 Go-Go. And one of the characters in that, Cure Mint, who is absolute waifu material, but has a hideous design, and I feel injured on her behalf because of it.
Oh.
You know, what's really funny about this is that they started scrapping the green Cures because
Why?
Nobody liked their designs.
Just make a better design.
I know. I guess they just decided green was not a creative color.
Oh, no.
But like Cure Mint in that series, there's five of them, and Cure Mint is the defensive one. She's the one who puts up the shield and then just kind of goes over to the side of the battle and goes, it's okay guys, I'm just going to be over here manning the shield, you go do you. except that one episode, she just completely loses the run of herself. Is our bunker being invaded again?
I think they found us.
Did you not put tinfoil over the cracks
again? I did. I swear I packed it as much as I could. But there's only so much tinfoil and Tesco doesn't deliver here.
Okay, we're going to have to dig ourselves in a bit deeper. Okay, but going on. Okay, so Kira Mint she's a very nice girl. She's very calm, very placid, doesn't get angry very easily. But they're fighting one of the toughest enemies that they've ever fought. And she just manages to get on Kira Mint's nerves long enough that Kira Mint drops all the defensive stuff, blocks every single attack within the space of 10 seconds, turns her shield sideways and blows a crater into the earth.
Because the shield would have a higher surface area.
She also has the biggest outfit in that team.
Yeah.
She does. She's a slightly different outfit to the rest of them. Well, the two older ones have slightly different outfits, but there is more surface area. They are slightly poofier. They've got these weird shoulder things. The design is hideous. It's really, really hideous, but it's got its weird charm, even so. And yeah, that's... Kira Mint is very, very powerful, but doesn't actually use it in the way you'd normally think, except when she loses the run of herself. But because she's got more surface energy on her outfit, that makes her more powerful than the others.
That makes sense. That makes so much sense.
Now, when you go on to the one that came after that, their outfits were actually fairly skimpy by the standards of Pretty Cure. Uh-huh. But they were a dance troupe. So it made sense for them to have bare arms and bare legs. Mm. But the most powerful one on their team, Cure Passion, in Fresh Pretty Cure, which is the fourth season, she's the strongest one on their team. She started off on the bad guy's side and then she changed allegiances and she got a power up. So she immediately gets, her hair goes from a bob to waist length. She's wearing leggings underneath her outfit and boots and little wings in her hair. And she's got a bigger dress than the rest of them. She's the only one who doesn't have bare arms and bare legs in their dance, even though they're a dance troupe. She's the strongest one.
Oh.
Are you okay?
No, I've just thought of another connection of how this works.
Okay, tell me.
You know in Steven Universe?
Yes.
You know Rose?
Yes.
Who was originally Pink Diamond? Spoilers.
We can't say spoilers on this podcast because we're giving spoilers every 5 seconds.
But when Pink Diamond was Pink Diamond, she just had like a little jester's outfit. But when she shrunk down, her dress got really big because it needed to contain all that power. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then the fusions as well.
The fusions get bigger and like... Yeah, and all the diamonds when they're really powerful are really big as well. So
yeah, even like a relatively... innocuous fusion like Opal. I mean,
yeah.
She's got a relatively normal outfit, but then she's got massive hair.
But even Stefani, like when they
fuse
that, couldn't think of the word there for a moment, when they do the tango, even they get quite big. They're like 6 foot something.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sorry, I just saw through the void there into the knowledge tree of just like Steven Universe would fit in here.
You know, you look like that. Do you remember that vine of the cat that gets a flower put on its head? That was the face you made.
Sorry, carry on.
Okay, so yeah, Cure Passion is the strongest one on our team. In Sweet Pretty Cure, they all have more or less the same size outfits, except that they get superpowered power-ups where... their dresses get longer and they gain massive angel wings.
Mm.
And they are bigger than the ones before because I think like the boring version is that they figured out that this would sell toys. Our version of it is that they needed more surface area. So they gained the power up. Doki Doki Pretty Cure. In that... the four normal Pretty Cures, they all have somewhat the same surface area in their outfits, except that later on they get Cure Ace, who starts off as an 8-year-old child, but when she transforms into an adult woman. And she's got the biggest outfit in that team. Also the biggest hair. She's got these massive corkscrewy things. And she is the hardest hitter. She's also the mentor for the rest of the team. So she teaches them how to be better magical girls.
I mean, if ever there was somebody to tell you how to be the best magical girl, I'm pretty sure a little girl would be able to tell you.
Exactly. But no, the only reason she's the most powerful is she's got the most surface area because she is the most mature.
Mm.
So she's got, like, her magical girl outfit is actually an overcoat. Like, it's a military overcoat.
Oh, man. Yeah.
The costumes in this are great. And then when their leader, Cure Heart, when she does her ultimate power up, she gets this big, long, very Princess Serenity style dress. But where it gets really crazy, super crazy, and one of my favourite series, Go Princess Pretty Cure.
I have seen some of this. I have seen the majesty of this.
But see, what I love about this is, right, obviously this was designed to sell, you know, to make people think of Disney princesses and make the kids go, I want to be a princess when I grow up. And the TV show is telling you, of course you can be a princess when you grow up. Anything is possible.
Buy our toys.
Yeah, pretty much. But it is actually, it's one of the better series to watch. The main character in that, Cure Flora, she has got, up until that point, she has got the biggest of the magical girl outfits. And it keeps getting bigger because she has several power-ups. So she starts off and it's kind of, the front of the skirt is knee length and the back of the skirt is one of those kind of almost tail type things.
Like an asymmetrical dress.
Yeah, it's an asymmetrical dress with huge amounts of poof. I've looked into making this and I would need 12 meters at least to start on the underskirt.
Oh, wow.
You know, so that is going to be a costume that will take a lot of fabric. Not only that, but her hair is huge. She's got this great big messy top knot and then all the hair that comes down waist length. Now, Cure Flora is a very, very cute design. She is also astonishingly brutal with her fights. And you can say that as well about the series that came before them, Happiness Charged, when Cure Lovely, at one point, who, again, has the most surface area. She's got this massive ponytail that reaches down to her ankles. And that series has got several different costume changes because they have this whole power theme, power tune-up, where they do variations on different types of costumes.
Mm-hmm.
So they have, like, 10 different outfits all gathering energy on their behalf.
Yeah.
And then when Cure Lovely does her final transformation into Forever Lovely, her costume is ridiculously huge. Like, it's this great big Swan Lake ballet inspired outfit with massive boots. And her hair goes beyond ankle length into proper Rapunzel style. And she gets these massive angel wings. Again, just gathering more energy. All of them get massive power-ups, but like I said, it gets ridiculous in Go Princess Pretty Cure because they get the first princess upgrade, which is where the underskirt of the main outfit bellows out and becomes one of those big colonial American Victorian style dresses.
Oh, yeah.
With the massive hoop skirts underneath it. They then power up from that as well into even bigger dresses until the dresses are so, the dresses of the hair are so big that it looks like they're on stilts.
Oh no.
Like, there is no way possible that they can be tall enough to wear these dresses. They are that big. And that's when they're at the most powerful.
So they're just like little legsies dangling.
A little bit. And, you know, there might actually be wheels underneath that and they're just wheeling around the place. It would make sense because they also have to do the dance party in those dresses. They can't dance in those dresses. They're too big. I have danced in a hoop skirt before. It's not impossible, but I had it cut to the right size.
When you're dangling on top of like this massive dress, your feet wouldn't touch the ground.
Now, in fairness, when they did the dress power up with the, I'm assuming if they do have wheels, most of the end of that dance party is just them spinning. So you could do that in wheels,
twirling
if you need, twirling freedom, like in my Blissey costume. I couldn't think of any other dance moves to do, so I just twirled. Non-stop. Seemed to go down well. Going back to other Pretty Cure series then, when you look at individual teams, in Heartcatch, Cure Moonlight is probably the most powerful. She's got the biggest outfit. Their outfits are quite stripped down. Now, I did find a Reddit page where they talked about which of the Pretty Cures would be able to defeat all of the other ones in a fair fight. And they figured out that probably one of the most powerful ones is Cure Honey from Happiness Charge, who goes from very short hair and overalls to having, first of all, one huge outfit and then another even bigger outfit with fairy wings and her, she gets almost like an afro. And again, she's got the 10 different outfits. to power up. She wears a detective outfit at some point. That entire series is just an excuse for them to dress up. It's not one of the more popular ones, but the whole theme of that, because every Pretty Cure series has a theme. And the theme is usually something that will resonate with kids. So this one was all, it's fun to dress up. That was their theme. So they had many, many different costumes. They had their fighting costumes and then they're just regular solving mysteries outfits, which is literally just a Sherlock Holmes hat and a cape. But these are magical outfits, so they're still gathering energy for the final power up and then the final attack. Yeah, then there's like, they did say also there's reality warpers like Cure Miracle and Cure Magical from Pretty Cure Harry Potter.
I really hope it's actually called Pretty Cure Harry Potter.
It's not. It's called Maho Girls, but so Magical Girls. And it's just, it takes place in a witch academy because of course it does. They get, I think, 5 different outfit changes based on gemstones.
Oh.
And they also get the massive hair because they start off, they're like 10 years old, but when they do the power up, they turn into 16-year-olds and their outfits just get bigger and bigger as time goes on. Especially the hair, like I've looked into doing the wigs and there's a huge amount of hair that's needed for all of this. What I'm saying is cosplaying Pretty Cure is nearly impossible. Okay.
If people can do 40k, you can do 40k Magical Girls.
Sometimes I think there must also be like a connection with that game that you and I like to play on our mobile phones, Love Nikki.
Oh yes.
Do you know when they when they lay down the challenges? Now, Love Nikki, of course, is, well, do you want to explain Love Nikki to the people?
Yes. Love Nikki is a Android game that's from China, where you basically fight people with clothes. You dress up and you get points for everything that you have on you, and you can literally throw shade at the other person. It's like, ha, that colour, it is repulsive. And they'll get really upset and they'll lose points. Like, how dare you? This was my grandmother's coat. And
you can steal their socks as well.
You can steal their socks and their shoes and you can put them to sleep. And it's absolutely wonderful. But all of the sets, the bigger the dresses and more intricate it is, the more points you get. So
absolutely. But then there's also the fact that when they do those challenges, that sometimes, like, your little helper, Momo, who I swear has got some sort of an ulterior motive going on.
It's like Love Nikki Kirby.
Cube,
there you go.
Cube from Magic and Madoka. Yeah, he is that world's equivalent. But he's like, you should wear this outfit. It'll get you the best. And it's always this hideous mismatch of all sorts of things, like rain boots with a
biker helmet.
Yeah, a biker helmet and a sword, just a random sword. And you're just like, this looks awful, but you win.
I absolutely love some of the description. It's like, wear a classical outfit to the beach. And the recommended would literally be the least likely thing you would ever wear to a beach in your life. But, like a full suit of armor kind of thing.
You know, or Jester's outfit.
Oh, Jester's outfit.
Outfit for hanging out on the beach.
Ah, yes.
But yeah, I think Love Nikki operates on the same principles that the more surface area that you have, the more powerful your energy is.
The more things you have on your person.
Exactly, yes. They don't necessarily have to match. There was a vine that guy did as well where... like he turns up at the he's fought off all the demons and he ends up at the boss's house and the boss just looks at him and goes, oh, finally you're here, what are you wearing? It's just like it's like he's put on all the clothes that have the different stats.
Oh yeah,
but none of them match, so he looks insane.
I love when that happens in games, like, because you'd want to have it all aesthetic, but they just never have the correct stats, so you end up looking like some form of patchwork mess.
You see,
wonderful.
That makes sense of sometimes the really hideous designs in Pretty Cure, because like I said, Cure Mint, even though she's prime waifu material, has got a hideous character design, but that makes sense. When Cure Black and Cure White had the hideous leg warmers, and then the team that took over from them in Splash Star, they looked almost the exact same as them, except they made the hair bigger and spikier and even more leg warmer. And it was also hideous, but they were pretty that was actually a good season. But it makes sense. Like, none of these things actually have to match or have to be aesthetically pleasing in order to be powerful. In fact, maybe sometimes the more ugly your outfit is, the more powerful. Because I swear, Cure Flora in Princess Pretty Cure, she has one outfit that is just the tackiest, most awful Poundland Barbie knockoff thing that you have ever seen.
Do you know, from Wish?
A little bit, because it's got all these real plasticky looking gems stuck onto it, and eyesore. And normally I adore Cure Flora. I'm desperate to cosplay as her one day if I ever get enough fabric for that costume and enough hair bundles to do that wig. I will do it someday. But that outfit is hideous. Absolutely hideous. And it keeps happening. But yeah, oh, where was I? I've gotten massively... Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to move on a little bit from Pretty Cure. Because, believe it or not, I'm not caught up on all the seasons. I'm still only halfway through Hug 2. What? Sorry, I just lost my train of thought there. You were distracting me with your facial expressions.
I'm sorry. I was thinking of why did they mistreat green so much? Green is a lovely colour and it deserves
But green is not a creative colour.
It is a creative colour.
I don't know. They tried to sneak in a couple of the cures in that had splashes of green on their outfit. And was like, here, you've been looking for a green cure? Here's a green cure. And it's like, that doesn't count. That's mostly orange or that's mostly pink.
But why couldn't they do it like nature or fairies or just...
They did it kind of in Happiness Charge when Cure Princess had her... macadamia hula dress, which was mostly a green color palette, but she only wore that a couple of times.
Just the name of that was amazing. I'm sorry.
Stop. One of the other power ups is called Lollipop Hip Hop. Oh, and she dresses up as a skateboarder.
Oh,
it's super cute.
I feel like I really need to watch this because recently I've just been watching Murder, She Wrote. So
more on that later. Yeah, listen, it's pretty glorious. It's a lot of fun and it's just something nice and cheery to watch. It's a nice series. I would recommend it. The only thing is you're going to be there for most of the year because I haven't caught up on all of it. And yet I have all this knowledge. You don't necessarily have to watch every single season of every single one of them. Sometimes you can get by just watching the All-Stars movies.
You know I'm gonna.
Okay, well, I'll see you in a couple of years then. When you've gotten all caught up. As I say this, I have not caught up on Hug 2 yet, which is the one that they made almost 2 years ago. I have not watched any of Star Twinkle Pretty Cure, even though I can sing the ending theme tune off the top of my head. And they're already bringing out a new one. They just churn this out so quickly. It's insane.
It must be nice to be in a fandom that actually puts out content. Sorry. I'm not salty.
The content is really just reblogging cards of different outfits, because the Pretty Cure is also like the merch always has them, like, here's the Halloween special where they're wearing these outfits. Here's the Christmas special, they're wearing these outfits. It is just nonstop gathering surface area energy, which is why they are the most powerful magical girls. But listen, I'm going to have to move on because I've been talking about Pretty Cure for way too long now.
Yeah, it was.
This is my life.
It's a good life. You get content. Like, I've been in the Yuri on Ice fandom for nearly 4 years, and when's that movie happening? Never. So that's why I'm like, Pretty Cure.
When everything is going wrong, always choose magical girls.
Yes.
But sort of briefly, we did discuss Magica Madoka. So Puella, Magi, Madoka, Magica, which was a very dark and gritty magical girl
the
series.
Best.
It was the best. It was super bleak. It was glorious. But to kind of lend some extra credence to our theory, when Madoka changes into god mode, mm-hmm. She gains a dress that essentially contains a universe. And she therefore becomes God. Yeah. So. Obviously.
She has literal suns in her dress.
She does, yeah. She is a universe swallower within the ruffles of her petticoats.
She has all of the power.
And then, like, once Homura becomes kind of her secondary, becomes secondarily as powerful underneath her, she also gains a massive outfit and great big black crow wings because she becomes Satan.
Yes.
More or less.
Because Magical Girl shows, where would you go without, like, literal Satan?
But it's kind of, then, that kind of leads into when the Magical Girls give in to despair and become witches. And then those witches become very flat and two-dimensional.
But they become huge.
They become huge, but they lose a lot of their dimension and have to be then defeated by Magical Girls. So is there a bit of an energy transference when they go from 3D to 2D?
Well, you know, when you see solar panels, they're not 3D. They're flat, like. So they're trying to soak up all that delicious, like, magic juice to make them powerful.
It's possible. I was thinking that maybe it worked some kind of a way, like in the negative zone in Superman. You know, with the guys in the triangle.
Oh, just floating off into space as a piece of paper.
Yes. Something like that. But okay, we're not going to spend that much time on Magica Madoka, because there's all sorts of theories you can make about them. But we are here for crackpot theories only. What I really want to talk about is the show Wedding Peach.
Oh no.
Which was a show that I also watched on RTL 2 and learned German from. Wedding Peach so desperately wanted to be Sailor Moon that the character designer is the exact same that worked on Sailor Moon. So they look nearly identical. They have they have that early 90s anime look to them.
When you mentioned Wedding Peach, I automatically just thought of, like, Super Mario Peach. I'm like, yeah, she does have a big dress.
Did you watch any of the clips of Wedding Peach?
I can just see the light go from your eyes. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I know your time is at a premium.
I was looking at pedicure.
Yeah, okay. Well, then that actually makes a lot of sense. how much time have I wasted on pedicure so far? Okay, yeah. But Wedding Peach is a Sailor Moon clone.
Yeah.
Except that instead of focusing on, you know, stars and the universe and planets and things like that, they focused on the finery of weddings and people's dreams being wrapped up in weddings. Were your dreams wrapped up in your wedding?
Well, I was very happy to be getting married, but I could literally have been married in a dumpster and I would have been just as happy. Like,
that's fair. It's just they played it up as this whole mythical thing. It's a really crazy series because they have two transformations. For starters, they transform into a wedding dress. Except that really only the main character has a wedding dress. The other two girls have dresses that look very like bridesmaids' dresses. Mm. And of course, they're like late 80s style.
Oh, no.
So big, massive leg of mutton, sleeves on them, big poofy stuff, veils, little pillbox hats and the...
Made of polyester.
Probably. But what's really funny about it when you're watching it is every single episode after the main character does her transformation and then she goes to fight the villain, she trips over the hem of her wedding dress and she goes, oh no, I can't possibly fight in this dress. I'd better change again. And then she changes into a shorter dress that doesn't even look that wedding-y except for the fact that she's wearing a garter. Yeah.
So does that become like her going away outfit?
No, because it's Sailor Moon's outfit with a recolor and and just slightly tweaked.
Ah, yes. Legally distinct from the Lollipop Guild.
What?
You not know that Futurama thing that's like, we are legally distinct from the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop
Guild. No.
We are legally distinct. Sorry, I'm so sorry. That just immediately came into my head when you try and like bootleg a character design but not copyright infringe it. So it's like legally distinct from the Lollipop Guild.
Okay.
I'm very sorry.
No, what it is this is the outfit that she's going to do her high kicks in, even though she never actually high kicks the villain. If she was a pretty cure, she would beat them to death with her legs.
crush a watermelon between her knees.
Ah, like. Oh, stop. There's an episode of Happiness Charge where the main character beats up one of the villains using two of the other villains as boxing gloves.
I'm going to beat up this mofo with this other mofo.
One of the pink pretty cures headbutts a villain.
I mean, you got to use what you have at your disposal. And if that happens to be your forehead, have at, like.
And she did. This was the kind of the alien looking character designs as well. So they all had massive foreheads. So she put it to good use. But no, I digress. OK, so she changed into her small dress so she wouldn't be tripping up all the time. And then she does her magical attack and the villain goes away. And Jay is saved. Woo! Everybody can get married again. We've saved marriage for the population of Japan, I guess. It's very, very strange. But the only way that that actually makes sense is if our theory is canon.
It's canon.
Because she has to change into the big dress to soak up energy to power up her magical attack so that she can then change into her butt-kicking outfit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. That is the only way Wedding Peach makes sense.
I like it. I think we have pretty much confirmed.
With 18 seconds to go.
Yeah. I think we've pretty much confirmed that magical girls are secretly some form of solar powers.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. There is a bit I forgot to say. And this is the best part. There's a whole bunch of other notes here. We can spend an extra 5 minutes on this, I think. Go away. Ah. My robot assistant is... Anyway.
I thought we said no technology in the bunker.
I had to do something because I knew we were talking about Pretty Cure.
It's interfering.
And you know what I'm like with Pretty Cure.
It's interfering with our doomsday clock.
Do you know one of my
We'll have to reset it now.
One of my greatest regrets about when we went to Tokyo is that I never went to the Pretty Cure shop. I only came back with 5 gashapons. Anyway. So... there was a show called NMB Tunmanabukun on Japanese television, and they had a scientist named Yanigata Rikao, who was a university professor, and he did a lecture on magical girl transformation sequences.
Oh my god.
So he wanted to answer the question, which is, why don't the villains ever attack the magical girls while they're transforming? Why do they just stand there and watch as they do this great big elaborate transformation sequence? He had a scientific explanation.
Well, you don't stick your hand in a blender when it's on. Like, if somebody's twirling that fast.
Well, here's the thing. He said, basically, they are held up in the air by the power of light, which is the rainbow things that power up their transformations. It can happen, but you would need a force of, I don't know how to say this number.
2,100 billion kilowatts.
Thank you. I was wondering about that. Like I said, I did home economics, not science in school. I cannot do with science. So yeah, 21,000 billion?
2,100 billion.
2,100 billion kilowatts per square meter.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how much force they needed to actually hold them off the ground and power up their attack. Which is 20 times the energy that's generated by the entire country of Japan.
So you attack them with the entire country of Japan and you might just make it end.
Not even that. 20 times the energy levels of the country of Japan per square meter.
Ah, yeah, then... No. Yeah. It's not worth it.
Said,
nah.
If a bad guy did attack mid transformation sequence, they would immediately be evaporated. Okay, fair enough. I might do the donkey noise for that. I'll leave it a mystery as to what you said. But yeah, then he ended that statement by saying, death awaits anyone who dares to disrupt a Pretty Cure transformation, because this is when they're at their strongest. Nice. And that is where I wanted to finish this theory. It was barely a theory. It was just me talking about how great Pretty Cure was for at least half an hour.
Wonderful.
Do you have anything to add?
No. I'd like to say that we're on a load of new places where you can stream our podcast. We are on Buzzsprout. We are on Spotify. We're on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter. We're very active on Twitter if you want to.
We're a little bit too active on Twitter.
If you want to come and ask us questions and like join in our mad ramblings. We're also on Instagram too, so you can check us out. And we're also on YouTube now. We have a few of Sinead provided some lovely doodles.
I did not want people to know that it was me.
Enjoy it.
There's, I'm going to donkey noise that too.
There's one of a skydiving shark. I highly, highly recommend it. But yeah, we're on YouTube now. So we have many, many ways for you to come and like listen to our lovely podcast. So
just basically Google Crackpot Theories podcast and you'll find us somewhere.
Yeah. So we have been the Crackpot Theory podcast. The truth is out there and it is so much weirder than you think.
Watch Pretty Cure.
Bye.